All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Big Footy Tiger Cast. We're back after a loss, which was a little bit disappointing, but I think with the amount of players we've got out and the kids that we've got playing, it was probably on the cards, and the Eagles played very, very well from probably the second quarter onwards to their credit. So I think for the time being, we're going to have to roll the punches a little bit, but we'll get to that part a little bit later. But to kick off the show, we do have a very special guest joining us tonight. And quickly, a big thank you to Nick Rerikas for organising this too. Played 54 games for the Tigers between 87 and 89, kicking 39 goals. Peter Wilson, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Lovely to be with you.
It's an ironic week to have you on, given you also played for West Coast and the Eagles just knocked us off. But that it actually wasn't deliberate, but it's worked out reasonably well, I suppose.
I think you're right. You know, it was definitely on the cards, wasn't it, when the Tigers have been decimated as far as the injuries are concerned. And you know, when you lose Taranto and you know who's been playing, you know, there's just too many outs to be competitive.
And the Eagles had the same issue last year though as well. I remember hearing there was players who had retired who were having to sort of come out of retirement to play in the waffle to keep them going.
Yeah, there was Aaron Black who came back. I think he's as old as I am. He was out playing for the waffle side. I mean, 3 years ago, he was playing, he came up and played one game in the seniors. So, the football club's gone through a very, very tough period. There's no doubt about that. Between injury and COVID, just absolutely decimated. And even now, the start of the year, they've had Flying Ryan, you know, sitting out. You know, we recruited a big ruckman from GWS. He goes down, gone for 12 months. You know, it's been a pretty tough run. So, I can feel for the Tigers at the moment, I can tell you.
All right, well, we'll go back. We'll throw all the way back to when you initially made your way to the Tigers. How did that actually all come about? Because I think you were 23, if I remember correctly, in the research I did today. So not a typical draft prospect, I suppose, but how did the getting to Richmond come about?
Yeah, look, we actually, you couldn't, there was a moratorium on all West Australian players being transferred out of WA for 3 years. So I had interest from clubs, you know, when I was younger, and there was just no clearances. So all of us basically were landlocked in West Australia and we couldn't leave. So, to the Waffles' credit, I mean, the league was very, very strong. Had a lot of players that could have quite easily gone over and played at the VFL, but again, no clearances. We had a couple of guys that were at Swan Districts, went to, John Fogarty was one guy. He actually transferred to Melbourne for work, and they would not clear him. And that went to Supreme Court, and John lost.
Jesus.
So that's the reason there was a lot of us that joined the league in 87 were, I guess, in a way mature aged. I'd already had six seasons in the WAFL. I'd played in three grand finals. We'd won a flag. I was an All-Australian, represented the state six times, but you couldn't go. How I got to the Tigers, well, I grew up, my uncle was a mad a supporter and a coterie member in Richmond, lived in Melbourne, and I used to go over when he was living in WA. I used to go to his place and watch the winners, and I became a bit of a Tigers fan, watch KB running around with that flip-top hairdo of his, and the way he'd celebrate the gold I loved, and of course the Tigers at that time were getting around the place. They were winning flags and they were pretty powerful. So it was a pretty easy decision to barrack for the Tigers as a kid.
And do you think that being 23 and starting, I suppose, your VFL, as it was called then, career, do you reckon it's easy to make that transition being slightly older, having a bit more size and experience behind you rather than what we see these days with kids coming out of the NAB League, you know, as an 18, sometimes even 17-year-olds into the thrust of it?
Yeah, well, I guess if you look at the averages of kids that are drafted, you know, they're taking at least, you know, 2 to 3 years to actually make a dent. I found the transition. I came over with Michael Mitchell. Mitch was older than me, I think by a year or so. Mitch would have been 24 on his debut year. Same situation. Played a lot of football. played in grand finals, premierships, Sandover medalist. So when we hit the ground, we didn't find playing in the VFL, that hard, to be honest with you. The grounds were horrendous in comparison to what they were like in WA. They're so soft and things. So I think the only thing we had to do is get used to, you know, training with that soggy area and Punt Road. Trust me, gave us a good grounding, because you'd tread onto the ground looking up at the old Nilex clock. It's 1 degree or 1 degree below, and your feet are six inches into the mud. So we got to find out what it was about pretty quickly, and we adapted pretty quick too, I think.
So with regards to moving over, did you sort of stay together with Michael Mitchell when you come over? How did it kind of all play out with the shifting across from Perth?
No, I actually bought a hotel with my uncle, Lolland Tavern Hotel in Richmond, corner of Lennox and Richmond Terrace. So we bought that at the end of 1987. Actually, basically, after I signed with the Tigers, we went to an auction and bought the hotel. So when we went over, I got married with my longtime girlfriend, and who's still my wife to this day. I don't know how she's managed to pull that off. But we moved into the hotel. So we're, 500 metres from Punt Road, and we were both in there working 7 days a week, and I'm playing footy at the same time.
Jeez, it's a changed way that footy works now, isn't it? There's no more working on the side. It's just all footy.
Yeah, look, we didn't. I think Dean Kemp was the first professional footballer for West Coast, and he didn't become professional until 1995. He was an electrician. But again, full time jobs. We all had full time jobs. I had hotels and worked at the football club when I came back to West Coast. We all had full-time roles. So we'd train in the morning, we'd train at lunchtime, we'd train after, and we'd get home at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night.
That's crazy, isn't it? Now, in your first 2 years at the club, you had two separate coaches. You had Tony Jewell, would have been there upon your arrival, and then Kevin Bartlett took over. What was it like playing under both Tony and Kevin, and were there any vast differences between their two styles?
Yeah, very different. Fire and Brewstone was TJ, but I loved TJ. He was a really good coach. I really enjoyed my football playing under Tony, who was sort of just an old fashioned style of coach, and I loved the way he got about it. KB was, again, I've been watching Kevin play football for a long time, but KB's coaching style was a little bit different than what I was used to. I came from 6 years under Ron Alexander at East Fremantle, and Ron was very tactical and full of theory, and we followed that to the T on the way that Ron would like set up. And Kevin was more of a coach that would like to see you play how Kevin played.
Right, okay.
And some of us just aren't that good, Chris. So it was pretty hard sort of taking instructions from Kevin, because Kevin would just turn and I said, just play like I used to play. Well,
pretty high expectations there. Jesus.
Yeah, look, he was a different cat. We look, as a player and a coach, we didn't get along too well, but outside of football, I got along and do get along with KB really well. I worked with him in the media after I retired, and he's a great bloke. But as a coach and a player, we didn't see eye to eye. He did say to me, I was probably the most selfish footballer he ever seen. Sort of, all I want to do is stay with the Tigers and get a new contract. And he said, you're the most selfish bloke I've ever met. And I looked at Kevin and thought, selfish me? You're the one that had the nickname Hungry.
Yeah, yes. That's a huge call, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, at least you...
We didn't see eye to eye. At the end of the day, it all worked out. Cameron Swab was a very young chief executive officer. He came in, thought I was selfish as well. I'm getting told by a 21-year-old how to play football. Lucky he could get a kick in a barnstormer footies. and he's running a footy club. So yeah, look, it didn't end the way I would have liked, but at the end of the day, if we were going to stay in Melbourne, we wanted to play for the Tigers, and I could have gone and played for three or four other clubs, but no, if it wasn't the Tigers, then we had to come home, and I wanted to play with them most.
That's fair enough. Now, in your first year at the club, I think we only had 5 wins, which isn't obviously a very good season at all, but what was the overwhelming feeling at the club during the 87 year going through and, sort of only picking up 5 wins for the year?
Yeah, look, the 5 wins were disappointing, but if you go back, memory's getting a little vague, Chris, only 35 years ago or longer. You sit back and look at it. We might have lost 5 games by under 2 goals. So we weren't far off the mark, but we had a lot of ageing superstars. You know, we had Michael Roach, who basically had to get on the ground in a wheelchair. His back was so bad, and he just kept powering on. Jimmy Jess, Neil Peart, Fleabag Waitman, Mark Lee. A lot of guys have been around a long time, played a lot of footy, and there was just ageing legs. Maurice Rioli, and a great example of that was probably our first game that I played in, which was against West Coast at Subiaco Oval. And we were up by 6 goals at 3-quarter time, but run out of legs. Maurice went off the ground with cramp, and we just couldn't find the football in the last quarter. And I think that was a bit of a sign of things to come, is that we were okay and we're competitive, but when it came to playing that 4 quarters out, we just didn't have the firepower or the playing group to sustain the effort.
There was a slight change of guard, I suppose. In 88, there was a small climb, a little bit of a resurgence up the ladder. What do you put that down to? Was it a couple of changes of personnel? Was it some different tactics going into the new season?
Yeah, look, there probably was, and that was probably Kevin's style, which was, run and carry at all costs. And, there was a fair bit of flair, and that sort of did elude. But, some of the younger boys came in and started to step up. You've got, I might get it right here, but Craig Lambert was starting to show a lot. We had, the younger brigade that were coming through, Trent Nicol, Alan McKellar, Jeff Hogg. All guys that had come through the Colt system, and there was just that push of some of the younger talent. Unfortunately, and there was so we were getting younger. Inconsistencies came with that, but we couldn't, again, just not good enough the following year to sustain that effort.
Now, you mentioned some of the players that you played with. And there's some absolute rippers in there. Maurice Rioli Sr., Michael Mitchell, who you obviously moved across with, and Roachie. What was it like playing with players like that? I mean, some of them obviously coming from the Waffle as well, which is just hugely talented in WA to get them all at the same club. But what was it like playing with those guys?
Yeah, look, with all the West Australian guys, it was great. It was Dave Palm and, as I said, Maurice and Mitch, and we'd all play State of Origin footy together. So, that it was to walk into the club. It was Johnny and Nia who I knew, again with state football, and so it wasn't foreign. Walking into the change rooms, it's not like I was walking into a pile of guys I didn't know. I played in the All Australian series against the Irish and two of the country with Dale Waitman, who tried to get me in trouble everywhere I went.
It's not like him.
I'm the biggest party animal in Australia. Settled now. So going into the club, it was very, very comfortable. But some of the guys, when you talk about those guys, Jim Jess, I don't know if you know Jim, but he's just an absolute ripper man. And it was just a pleasure to play footy with him. It was a pleasure to play football with Michael Roach, who I thought was an absolute superstar. And there was, Greg Strawn and plenty of other guys that all had been around the club and been in the 1980 flag. So, and the 82 grand final side. It was star-studded, but everyone was, their best football was behind them.
Yeah. I've got a couple of moments written down that I wanted to talk about. 1988, the Panasonic Cup, which I had no idea even existed. I'm assuming must have been the pre-season cup comp. Yeah, we played Carlton, and you kicked the first two goals of the game within a minute of each other. Got a little Joe the Goose out the back, and then a nice little left foot snap around the body for the second goal. Must have been a good feeling to get off to two goals in under a minute.
Yeah, look, it was. I think I remember correctly, but I actually partially tore an ACL in that game.
Oh, and, shit!
I think it was prior to half time. I can't remember if it was that game or against Melbourne, but it was in the night series of 1988. And so I had a ball smothered trying to kick around the corner, and partially tore the ACL in my right knee. So I had 6 to 7 weeks of ridiculous rehab, trying to strengthen my leg up to make sure that the muscle group would hold the knee together without having a reconstruction. And I was lucky enough that that came off, and I think it was probably around 3 that I came back in and played against Fitzroy at Princess Park, and had a good day out. Riffing start. I had a great pre-season. I was ready to go. But the knee injury set me back.
How frustrating is that as a mental hurdle that you've gone through all this pre-season building up to getting the season underway and then copping an injury like that? Is it hard to mentally rock up week after week to all those physio and rehab sessions? Is it just a long, long road back, or is there a lot of support around you to help you through it?
Yeah, not a huge amount of support. You got to remember, you're a semi-professional. Part-time medical staff, no one was full-time. You couldn't just roll up to the club and get treatment. So a lot of the rehab is basically back to the individual. I remember going out and buying a push bike and riding around, Richmond and Hawthorne on one leg, just using my right leg only to strengthen it up. You're just asking anybody for advice. But Benny Wees was the doctor, who's the mad doc? There's another doctor who's still a doctor for the Western Bulldogs, who was with us. Massive moustache. I'll think of it later. You're just speaking to all these guys and part-time medical staff trying to get you right. So it was hard, a little deflating, but having the love of the game and wanting to play drove you to work. Drove me to a point of being ridiculous on how much time I spent on getting myself back into it.
Zimmerman was in the name someone put in chat.
There
for the
we
doctor.
Go. Zimmer. It's the greatest moustache I've ever seen.
Now, the other moments I was watching on YouTube today was 1989, round 5 versus North Melbourne. You collect a loose ball on the wing and then you just take off 4 bounces with a lovely finishing goal. Do you have fond memories of that run? Were you ever going to pass that one off, or was it just... goal on the front of the mind the whole time? It was a ripper.
Well, there you go, Chris. You got to remember who the coach was. I took a leaf out of Kevin Bartlett's book. There will be no handballing. So I must admit, probably a lot of flair of my game at East Fremantle was that style. It's that it was very much a run and carry, and wasn't new to me. When I get an opportunity to take off, there was no way I was giving that off. No, trust me, neither with Michael Mitchell. He's the same.
I was about to say the same thing. We had him on a while ago and asked a similar question. He was never handballing that either. He was running and going for goal all day, every day.
Yeah, I'm sure I was running past Michael when he got the goal of the year, asking for the football. I'm sure he said a couple of words to me that I won't repeat.
That seems to be a common trend for the if everyone has to play like KB, then it makes sense why you're all doing it. It makes complete sense.
Right. Exactly right.
Sadly though, in 89 we did slip down the ladder. I think we finished last again. Was that how much did that hurt after sort of a mini resurgence in 88 to then slip back down in 89?
Yeah, look, that was it wasn't a great feeling. I mean, I think the club sort of knew that, you know, they needed to move things around. That was sort of mid-season. I actually found out that Cameron Swab had been touching base with other football clubs about trading me out. Trevor Poole found out that there was, you know, chatter around town that to be trading out. John Manton was the same, and so unfortunately, loose lips sinks ships, and that feeling wasn't great. One, we're not winning, we're not performing, and the football club's, you know, wasn't shy on flipping bikes out. So you know, it was pretty ordinary. Again, coming from a football club that in the West that was used to winning a lot, so you know you get pretty down on yourself, and sometimes you get down on your teammates, which is not right, but probably a bit of my style. I had great mates at that footy club. You know, Alan McKellar and Jeff Hogg and Flea and Mitch and Stan. You know, I really loved the footy club. I didn't want to go anywhere, but when you're losing and you know you're not wanted, that just makes it even harder. So you sort of sink back into yourself, and you're not going to play great footy. My last game was sort of, I think there was probably about six games to go in the 89 series, and came off the ground, had a pretty good game against the Western Bulldogs, or the Scraggers at the time, out at Witten Oval. And I was actually approached by a member of the Western Bulldogs support staff. Are you keen to go back to the West? So there was already talk that Michael might have already had the job pretty early.
Jesus.
All that chatter goes around, and suddenly you've got people saying, well, you know, we've come back to the West, and you know, your performances drop off. You're not concentrating on what you're doing, and the feeling around the club was pretty similar. And I spoke to Trev Poole about it, so I went to West Coast. Trevor goes to Geelong. We both play against each other in a grand final in about 3 years' time. So, yeah, I don't think given the Tigers got that right.
No, definitely not. No, I think there's a lot of upset Tiger supporters at how that played out, because a lot of them loved watching you play in the yellow and black. But given obviously the circumstances around the departure, it's pretty horrible the way that, you know, you were treated on that front. But is there still a small soft spot for the club?
Oh no, more than the soft spot. The whole family sits and watches the Tigers every week.
Oh, very good.
We're all Tiger supporters. Of course, West Coast have jumped to number one. And that happens when you play a couple of flags for a football club.
Absolutely.
Become a life member. We love the people that we played footy with, and we built, you know, lasting relationships with. And you know, when I get a chance, unfortunately I didn't get to go to the pre-game with the Tigers this week because I had other commitments for West Coast. So I missed out catching up with Flea and some of the crew on the weekend. Dave Palm was there, apparently. Mitch was there. I missed out on that, which is a bit disappointing. But hopefully, we'll catch up later in the year. So we have a very soft spot for the Tigers still, and we have very, very fond memories of our early days. And even when it was tough, we still loved the place.
Oh, that's good to hear. That'll please a lot of supporters out there. And even though we are a Tiger-based show, we do have to ask, of course, about the two flags, 92 and 94. It must have been just a weight lift off your shoulders and just a monumental occasion that you've gone from obviously some of the poorer finishes that we had at Richmond to then all of a sudden getting two flags in a, you know, 92 and 94.
Yeah, look, it was, Chris. I mean, look, it was in the end of the day, it was a godsend really for my career. One that extended my career, I think. But you know, we played finals in 1990. I played finals in every single year. You know, I had six seasons with West Coast before I retired when I ran out of puff. But we played finals every year. So we went deep in 1990. We played in the grand final in 91, 92, 94, 93 was disappointing. We got beaten by the Baby Bombers when we shouldn't have. I think one of the first times that Mick ever got outcoached, and yeah, we didn't. We that one slipped. We got, I think that got away from us. So it was a wonderful career. You know, so I've got to probably in the day say to Kevin and Cameron, thanks.
Well, yeah, like I said, we made the blunder on our side, and you were able to capitalise. So that's all the power to you. What about being? I didn't know this had happened, but in the 92 grand final, the kick over your head, and then having that famous coined line by Dennis Committee, like a cork in the ocean over his head. Is it weird to have a commentary line linked to a bit of play that you were directly involved in? And what would have the repercussions been had you missed it in the state of the game that it was in?
Yeah, look, you've got to understand that. So now, if that was Kevin Bartlett coaching, he would have been thrilled that someone was going to go outside of all the team guidelines and try something ridiculous like that. But if I had missed, Michael Malgas would have had me sitting on the pine for the rest of the day. I have no doubt about that. He was a stickler for the rules, Michael. And getting off sun was one of them. So, look, and it's been great, to be honest with you. Look, I can still walk through town. I can walk through the stadium still, and people still call out, like a cork in the ocean. It happens all the time. Like, I must admit, there wouldn't be a month go by, or if I'm in town, it would be it's weekly if I'm in the city. That people will coin that phrase still, and I don't know how they still recognise a bloke that's 60 years of age. But anyway,
that's so good.
It's pretty cool. I always do joke, and I do with Dennis when I see him, and say that I made you famous, Dennis. So thanks very much.
it's probably fair enough. Cool. And finally, before we let you go, the current day Tigers. What are your thoughts on our season so far, and what have we got to look forward to for the rest of the year, I suppose?
Yeah, because injuries decimate sides. Look, I really like some of the kids coming through. It's exciting. I mean, and there's some real excitement, but when you get Taranto going down, Hops on the side, Lynchy, if you look at the stats with Lynchy out, it's not good.
No.
It's that target. He's not the greatest full forward I've ever seen getting around, but he competes. He's such a big unit, and he brings the ball. Yeah. It's like Josh Kennedy for West Coast. You take Kennedy out of that side, and suddenly they're going sideways looking for opportunity. You can't expect Shea Bolton to be your full forward. Really tough. If the Tigers don't have their best 10, it's going to be another tough year, and let's hope it's just not another ninth. Got to a stage here. Yeah. Ninth. How long did that go for?
There's a few.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? There's a lot of good kids, but like anything, after a sustained period of time of winning flags, it catches up with you. Unless you're the Geelong Football Club, who seem to continue to extend players' careers and trade some amazing talent in. I don't know how they do it. But
Sydney as well. Sydney always were able to hang about in the top eight.
Maybe it's the surf. Maybe it's this. They like getting guys in. They recruit the farmers and the surfers at Geelong, and maybe it's just the nightclubs and the surf in Sydney that keeps these guys coming in. But they do have a massive focus on their player group, past and present. Sydney are amazing. Their past player organisation is just powerful. Everyone is treated equally from one game to 300 games. And that shines through. Geelong are pretty similar like that as well. They're very strong and deep in their player group. It's funny. It works. West Coast got up on the weekend. They were celebrating. They had all the guys from the 1987 side. So So the first squad were invited and were celebrated on Sunday, I think that was a big part of why West Coast actually stood up after three very quick goals from the Tigers, and it looked like the Tigers were going to romp, but they knuckled down. So I think that's a real important part of football clubs. Tigers aren't too bad at it. But no one's as good as Sydney and Geelong on that. And I think you can see that while they're always powerful. And clubs should learn from that, I think. Tigers got some tough weeks ahead.
Yeah, no, I think we definitely do. But you're right, it's always good to embrace the players who have walked before those who are currently playing, because a lot of it wouldn't happen without them. So it is good to make sure they're all celebrated appropriately.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think that's really important for the current playing group is to, to see your past players around your footy club. That tells the player group, there's strength behind you and other people that are willing you on. And I think it's really important for, the past players to have a big role in their footy clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Peter, thank you so much for jumping on tonight. Much appreciated. Great to hear some of those stories about your time as a Tiger and a little bit as an Eagle as well. We really appreciate your time, and I'm sure the Tiger Army will have been glad to hear from you.
Yeah, wonderful. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Thanks, mate. Thank you again to Nick for organising that as well. Much appreciated. Thank you again, Peter.
Beautiful. Catch up.
All right, there we go, guys. Peter Wilson on the show. Absolutely fantastic to hear from Peter and his stories about his time as a Tiger. You can listen to those stories all day, reminiscing about, the days that, I didn't necessarily get to see myself, and I'm sure Grock, who was just hanging in the green room, wouldn't have seen a lot of it either, but very cool to hear about all those past stories. And it just sort of, I suppose, gives a bit of a greater appreciation for what we had, Grock.
Yeah, I think I caught the last 15 minutes of it. Apologies for being late, guys. I got caught up with some public transport issues. It's fascinating. Always fascinating to see, the past players' perspectives on the current Tigers, but especially just for those of us who are younger supporters, myself and a lot of us who maybe weren't around in the 70s or the 80s when we were really successful, and maybe towards the middle period of the 1980s when the club really started declining. It's just great to get an insight into what the club was like then as well. So, yeah, great work, and thank you very much, Nick.
Yes, no, thank you, Nick, so much for getting Peter on. Really, really appreciate it. So there was a comment up here, Sentimental. Yes, he did. He bought, I think we established it was the London. not long after he signed for us, he and Michael Mitchell, and that's where they lived. So that's how they survived down here in the early days once they got picked up by the Tigers. But it's just interesting how much easier, I suppose, he and a few others found it starting football at 23 rather than coming in at like 18, 19. I think, and I know it's been floated a few times about increasing the draft age or the age where they can debut and things like that. And I think there's something in it.
Yeah, and I think, again, it just comes with life experience. They're obviously a lot more mature, especially back then. I think as Peter himself said it, back in those days, they were semi-professional. They weren't, coming in from talent pathways at 13, 14 years old, being identified and then put into state squads and things like that from under 15, 16, 17s right through to the carnivals and things like that. So I do think in some ways we've gotten better at talent identification. Obviously, we know who the elite players are, or not so much elite players, but the more talented players are. There's not really those like hidden away in the bush leagues that they used to be even 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you do have, and I know he's copped a bad rap over his career, but you see like Jack Watt's perfect example, was highly rated and it has admitted that he wasn't ready for all the limelight and being rushed in at 18 years old. The kid, when he was drafted, did still had school exams to do, so he missed three months worth of preseason training because he had education commitments. So
it's crazy.
I do think there is probably a fair and reasonable call for raising the minimum age to say 20 or 21 and maybe having a 3-year competition for 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. So
and
there's
And actually, if they were smart enough about it, if they did that, you would then try and you would hope they would then treat it like what the college football is in America in terms of the broadcasting side of things. Like even in Australia, we get so much exposure to NFL college games that if you're a serious follower of the sport, you know all the kids going into the draft. Whereas here, you'll know the top 10, and that's probably about it. So I think if they were to open it up to an older age, the more exposure we can get there, I think the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll jump into the unfortunate part of the evening and talking about the game on the weekend. West Coast 16-13, 109 defeated Richmond 10-10-70 by 39 points up at Optus Stadium, it's in Carlton. Look, I think a few weeks ago at work, I said I saw this coming. People at work laughed at me and I said, you don't understand what it's like to be a Richmond supporter. When you see things like this unfolding, like the North Melbourne game a few years ago, it just had the writing was on the wall. And I wasn't being facetious in my tweet about West Coast earmarking this as their grand final. I truly believe that from a non-facetious perspective, it's just they would have seen the outs we had and gone, this is the one we can win to get on the board. And look, the start of the game, our first 15 to 20 minutes clock was pretty good. We actually looked like very, very good. And then, it just kind of fell apart after that.
It's been that way for the last three or four weeks now where we get out to a great start, really quick out of the blocks, kick the first three or four goals of a match, and then all of a sudden the opposition just switches on or we switch off or, tactics change. And there's been a dramatic shift as I saw Jones Racing, I believe, mentioned that I made a thread on Big Footy about it. But, yeah, it's just strange how it works out. It seems that we're doing the opposite of what we did under Dimmer, where we'd slow start, but then we'd grind the opposition down. It seems it's going the other way. We're starting quickly and then fading out. So, yeah, it's definitely a concern, and it's definitely something that I think Uze will be aware of. My only hope is that he's actually got he's actually got some plans in place and structure. I mean, he's got the week off to really think about it now.
Yeah.
Identify what's not working, maybe where he's maybe overestimated some of our abilities and experience and maybe where he's underestimated. So hopefully after the bye, we see a little bit of a tweak to the game plan. And RFC Centre, no. I know I said I was going to chuck $50 on it, but I completely forgot and didn't realise until I was, watching the game and, completely forgot to put the money into my sports bet account. So, it was, Instead of I'm drinking strawberry lemonade coffee.
Matthew, Richards, welcome firstly. Of course, there's no issue at all at rival fan bases joining in. There's a few people from opposition clubs who join in quite frequently, so the more the merrier. I'm glad you found us on the Big Footy Threads. Welcome. Lady Hawk, no, Groff forgot to put the bet on. I should have. I had about $16 in there, but didn't pull the pin on it. So looking through the goal kickers quickly, LaFell, who I thought was one of our best, I think, you could universally say, with three goals. Bolton with three had another good one. Sonzi won. Morris Rioli won. Dusty won. Liam Baker won. But just talking on LaFau quickly, Grok, I know his first game's a bit wishy-washy, and I've said it before and I stand by it, was because of the mix-up of things just before the game started. But his game against the Eagles, you've got to remember, he was playing on Barras and McGovern, who were two very, very good defenders. And LaFau is obviously very fresh to the game. But his running and jumping timing of the leap at the ball, his marking was very good. And I know he kicked a couple of behinds. One was a check side from the boundary, so that's, 50-50. The other one he probably should have got. But he's usually a pretty nice kick for goal. I was actually really buoyed by what I saw from him as a lead-up forward. It actually reminded me of a lot of athletic traits that Noah Bolter has.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that our forward line hasn't had since early Jack Revolt. In the early 2010s, when he'd actually lead and run and jump at the ball before his ankles and his hips got stuffed. But he was super impressive on the weekend. And the The pleasing thing for me as well was he actually got involved up the ground as well. He wasn't just parked forward. And I know there have been quite a few people calling for him when the ball's not getting down there to get him up the ground. Obviously, with a rugby background, he'd be used to, you know, contest and you know, physical contact and everything. So I do like the fact that he actually got up, and all the hype around Harley Reid with his pissy little don't argue. We see LaFau with two monster ones where he buried them six feet deep in the dirt, just monster of a bloke. But yeah, he's definitely definitely starting to grow into the role. It's just whether or not he can sustain it. Obviously, we now know what his level and what he can do. Again, it's just a simple fact of he's only played, what, four games now. He needs, like, can he back it up?
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether they were donagies. I actually felt like they were tackles. I thought he tackled the other person who didn't have the ball while he had possession. It was just a showing of brute strength. It was, it was quite enjoyable to watch someone actually ragdoll a player as much as he did. So hopefully he can go on with it. Like, I think we all have to understand there will be inconsistencies in his game over this next couple of years. But I feel like we've seen enough that we've got to get him to 50 games as quick as possible just to see what we're working with here and how much potential he's got, because, yeah, he's doing okay. Looking at the disposals, Liam Baker had a good first game back, 25 touches. I just fear that he's getting too used to that ground, if you catch my drift. Nick Vlosten, 24, Bolton, 21, Rioli, 19, Miller, 19. Miller, 19, shit, I would never have thought that. There we go. Broad, 18, and Jack Graham, 17. But, look, it was... as frustrating as it was, I think there's a little bit of a realization, a little bit of, I suppose, home truths that any club, and I'm not making excuses for the loss, I don't want people to think that, but any club with the injury toll that we had, like what West Coast had a few years ago, you're going to lose more than you win, unfortunately. No matter who you're playing against, it gets to a point where it's a little bit too hard to cover all the holes. Now, sometimes I think the effort wasn't there, Grok, which probably was the more frustrating part, because no matter what your skill or talent level is with the ball in hand, you can still do the defensive stuff without it. And I think that's what was lacking a little bit on the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before I touch on that, I'm not dissing Harley Reid. I'm just saying all the hype around his fend off on Dusty that was virtually just a little brush. Compare that to LaFau's, and there's a big difference. And
yeah, that fend off was nothing. But that aside, that was Harley Reid's best game by far and away for West Coast. He spent more time in the midfield, and every team would kill to have him. He was a Jet, but is.
Yeah, absolutely. Had a ripping game. Yeah, for us, I agree. I think at times our effort dropped, particularly through the midfield. There was no defensive pressure at all. And I think we're starting to see people are saying, oh, you know, Hopper's no good, Taranto's not great, what we gave up for him, you know, probably shouldn't have done. What they don't realise is they're also very good defensively. They're pretty much defensive-minded first, and then they go on the attack, and it just exposes. We got exposed on the weekend. We had no midfield. We're missing our four... essentially right now, our four starting midfielders in Taranto, Hopper, Prestia and Ross. They've usually been they'd be the four midfielders that I reckon we bookmark week in, week out as our starting midfield balance. So having, you know, Baker come in for his first game, you know, you've got Graham coming back off an injury, not great, first game, but Baker, you know, back. Graham, first game for the year under Dunn. Dow, who... we have question marks on his physicality. You've got Sonzi, who went through in periods, but we also know that there's question marks on his physicality. And our midfield was just brutalized by Elliot Yeo and Tim Kelly. They absolutely smashed us. Yeo had 15 clearances by himself, which is monumental. It's very much a carbon copy of the Gold Coast game in round one, where they just smashed us out of the clearance. Which is funny, because we were up 9-1 or something halfway through the first quarter in clearances. And then from there until start of the fourth quarter, it was 22 clearances to 3, which is a massive, massive shift. And I think that's where the game was lost, was there was no defensive accountability from that midfield. And I know Dusty has There's been query marks on Dusty's defensive application, but there was quite a few times where he was exposed, where he was just half-heartedly jogging. And it brings into focus again. I know that it's been dismissed, but is his heart really in it? If the efforts that he's displaying defensively and even offensively, like there were quite a few times, even this year, where Dusty would normally back himself, he sort of passed the responsibility on to others. I just think it was just a poor game all around from a lot of us.
Yeah, I think whether it was by design or not, that as the game got on and when it was out of hand, we still were putting the inexperienced kids in the middle, which I think is probably more of a learning thing. I think that was deliberately done. And I mean, we probably didn't have many other options. Unfortunately, that was probably always going to hurt with their more experienced players. And the one thing I do want to say is I have seen a lot of heat go to Young and Miller and the defense in general. And I think it's just worth noting that the defense can only play as well as the midfield sort of detain the other opposition midfield. And we had zero pressure on the West Coast midfielders. So it would have been an absolute nightmare of a game to be a defender for the Richmond Footy Club. Now, we've got to keep in mind that Young has played, 23 games and only started playing footy in 2016. Miller's still quite young too. I don't think they could have done much more. And I know we made Waterman look like Wayne Carey, which was heartbreaking to watch. They're going to have down days. And it just so happened that their down day coincided with the midfield having an even worse day, which put 20 times the amount of pressure on their jobs as key defenders. So we had no numbers behind the ball. They were one out all over the shop the whole game. And I don't want to put the blame onto them for that. I think, yeah, if you don't have team pressure, it doesn't matter if you had Alex Rance down there, they were going to get exposed.
Absolutely. And I think this just goes to highlight how important Koch actually was to our midfield, especially post 2014, 2015, when he switched up the role, he became a lot more accountable and defensive. But it's funny because our backs had a poor game, but in the first 15 minutes, Young and Miller looked amazing when we were actually winning clearances, when the ball was coming in high and long because we were actually winning clearances and getting territory with the ball. Miller was marking everything that came his way at that point. Once that pressure dropped off and, you know, at the usual broken tackles and things like that, that's when the Eagles broke out into space. And that's something that I don't think our midfield has had to deal with, not our midfield, but our defense, was the amount of free space and movement that the West Coast forwards had. They were always moving. They weren't stagnant. And it became like a movie, just watching the clearance straight out of the middle, easy hit up, 40 out on a lead, chess mark. It was training drills at that point for the West Coast midfielders. So definitely a lesson learned for all of us. And as you said, you know, the only alternative was to play Bolton and Dusty as our senior midfielders in that game. But then we're taking, obviously, Bolton's forward contributions out of the equation if he becomes that permanent midfielder. So it was,
yeah,
it's sort of six of one, half a dozen of the other in that case. But as Uzo said in his press conference, it was essentially we need to get the games into the kids, because, you know, in games like this where we don't have a midfield, they need to learn to be able to step up and step into the role. So yeah,
that's right. Like, I think as Richmond supporters, and I don't like saying this, but I think it's just the reality of where we're at. With all things considered, I don't think we should be going into games expecting to win or to even get close to winning, to be honest. We just aren't. With who we've got out, who we've got in, and what learnings they're going to be getting from games, we just won't have the capacity to play games out for four quarters at the moment, because they're just far too inexperienced. Unfortunately, with the amount of youth you've got in comes, as the dog coughs up the fair ball, as just the inexperience, it's too hard to cover. That's why we'll have some good patches and we'll look really, really good for good patches, but we're not going to be able to sustain it for four quarters because the young, and it's just unfortunate because the young kids that are in there don't have anyone else to learn off, especially the defensive aspects, which is actually concerning because, yeah, Bolton and Dusty don't really do much defensively. They'll teach our kids some great offensive stuff, but defensively in the middle, it's a little bit hamstrung. So I think short term, or medium to long term, I think we've got to brace ourselves for a couple of harsh losses. Don't get down on it. Just take it for what it is. Enjoy seeing the young kids develop. And look, all we can ask for is effort at this stage, I think, Grock. You just want to see him have a crack for four quarters.
Absolutely. Just don't give up. Just pressure. I mean, yes, you might be tired, but that's no excuse to drop off, to constantly jog, just not bother even trying to put any sort of pressure or doubt into the opponent. Obviously, against the D's, there's a possibility that Hopper may be right for that game. So there's a chance that our midfield gets strengthened a little bit against that. But again, against Melbourne, you've got Oliver and you've got Petraka, who are coming off pretty poor games for them. They'll be wanting to come out and show that was a one-off. So again, I think against the D's in a week and a bit's time at Anzac Eve, I think our midfielders need to definitely be working for the best part of a week to try and adapt to defensive structures and things like that. So it's good. Yeah, I do think, our midfield definitely needs to come to some sort of meeting and discuss what's not working and how to rectify it a little bit.
I think as a whole as well, the one thing I want to see us improve on dramatically is our tackling, or not letting opposition players burst through tackles. There was one stage Liam Duggan got through three players with three experienced players with absolute ease. I'm like, what is going on? That set such a terrible, terrible standard. Just those small things add up, like sticky tackles. And it's weird because we actually did have a pretty high tackle number as a collective. I mean, Jack Graham had 8, Dan Rioli 6, Nankervis 6, Mantle 6, Lafau 5. But there was a lot that we missed, and I think we need to start getting back to those defensive basics to pride ourselves on some of those things.
Absolutely. You only have to look at the Sydney game to see what tackles can actually do, actually sticking your tackles. We nailed all of our tackles against Sydney, and they could not move the ball. Against West Coast, they just swatted us off like flies. It just didn't seem to bother them. And even, as you said, the period, the incident with Duggan especially, there were three players and none of them went to tackle. They just sort of tried to corral him into the other player, and essentially he sidestepped and was out in space 15 metres in the clear, which was just ridiculous. There was almost a sense for me of that other player's closer. I'll let him do the hard work, sort of pass the buck sort of thing. And that mindset can't happen, especially in a young side. So complacency breeds, poor performance. So I do think that that's definitely something that we need to work on. Fitness, we know we're going to still be working on it, but that's no excuse for poor performances and poor effort.
Yeah, that's the effort can be done at any time. So that we need to see a bit more of that. A few players people have been asking about, Kaczynski. Again, personally, I thought it was the wrong call to play him. I just think we can get a bit more out of Naismith playing or Samson Ryan than Cozzy, and that's no disrespect to him, but I just think we have some slightly better options. Pickett, what are your thoughts on him as well?
I haven't been sold on Pickett all year, as I've been pretty vocal about. I definitely think now his decision-making and his execution have dropped off significantly in the last 12 months. He's just constantly running himself into trouble. His kicking is poor. At this point, it just smacks to me sort of like the Shane Edwards thing, where we kept him in the side to get him to 300 games when he probably should have been dropped. It smacks of that with Pickett, where he's coming up with poor performance after poor performance because he's close to 100 games. So I personally would, if we're really talking about wanting the kids to learn, what are we getting out of playing Pickett over someone like Banks or, Ralph Smith or something like that? Like, it doesn't make sense to have some players in because we want to get games into youth, but then putting up with poor performances from Pickett or McIntosh and players like that. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, he'll do like one or two really good things a quarter, but then have five or six like, oh my God, moments. I don't know. I'm not fully sold that there's someone ready to replace McIntosh or Pickett, but given the stage and the phase of the year that we're in, it doesn't hurt to try something else because we're not in a position to win games, so it probably doesn't matter as much as maybe what it did at the start of the year.
If we're talking about the wingman, like why not push Campbell up to a wing and bring someone like Steely Green in? Like, what are we losing out of that situation? Like, if we're genuinely serious about bringing kids in or playing them to see what they can offer going forward, I think that needs to happen. I think we need to push some of the younger players up on the wing and bring in younger players. I mean, we've still got Steely Green who is yet to debut at senior level and things like that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see one of them dropped for that in a little while.
Slons is an interesting one. I know he was sub on the weekend, but even when not sub, he's playing as half forward, which I don't really think he's suited to be honest. I know he's got a couple of goals there and he's done some nice things, but I wouldn't mind seeing him get a bit more of a run through the middle, or he has a crack on one of the wings.
Yeah, Sonzi, again, it's... My question marks on Sonzi are his decision-making under pressure. He panics, and the ability and his inability to handle physical contact. He's still very passive in the way that he plays. He's very much not a ball winner that I think we all expected him to be. I think coming up against bigger, harder bodies has got him a little apprehensive, we'll say. I don't think that he's going to be that ball-winning midfielder that we want. He's just far too passive, that he doesn't have that midfield grunt. So if anything, I could see him playing that midfield forward transition role of, say, a Lambert as that outside runner. But again, does he have the leg speed for that? He's not exactly the quickest player we have either. So if he's going to fit, the only way that he plays that role is if he builds his endurance and can be an all-day runner.
Mm. Yeah, no, fair enough. What do you make of McAuliffe's second game? It kind of didn't have a standout game. It didn't have a bad game either. I think he had 12 disposals, one mark, two tackles, one clearance.
I thought he was okay without being outstanding. And I think he's going to be all the better for it because essentially coming back, he was our third string midfielder. For a player who's coming into his second game, first starting off a dodgy ankle, he had his ankle strapped that game. Again, he's going to be all the better for that run. He had some nice patches. He's, like you can see, he's very strong in the tackle, can get a handball away in most situations, even when being tackled. But yeah, I thought he was okay. Again, you could have prime Chris Judd in that midfield, and he wouldn't be effective just based on the way that our structures were and the way the Eagles were playing. I just think, like, it was sort of lambs to the slaughter, so to speak. But again, the quicker we can get games into him and winning, obviously in the case we know Presti is probably gone at the end of this year. If he can come in, if we can get 15 games into McAuliffe this year, it will be better for it in 2025.
Yeah, persist with him. He's another one. I would love to see him play every game for the rest of the year, barring injury, of course. Speaking of injury, Short, we lost with a calf injury in the game, which isn't great. And then obviously Juddy Clark in the VFL has done his ACL, which is horrible, horrible news. So thoughts go out to Juddy Clark, who I think belongs in the ones when he's when he's playing. I think his best football is easily at senior level. And look, there's going to be plenty of debate and plenty of opinion about the fact he was sent back out there. So there's been comments from people who were at the VFL game who saw that the doctors and the medicos put him through all your normal traditional ACL tests on the bench, strapped him up, and he obviously didn't show any signs of it being torn and went back out there. But yeah, I just think when it comes to knee injuries or anything that's a bit sus, just err on the side of caution next time, guys. But no, shit news for him.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not like Bash's calf in the 2020 grand final where it was the last game of the year, all or nothing, like you're in for a flag, strap him up and get him out there because, you know, a half-fit Bashir Hooley is still a very good player. A VFL game for Juddy Clark, what was, I mean, we were down, they were grinding us. What was the benefit of sending him back out there with a suspected knee injury? Like, I think that was some negligence on our part. There was no benefit or upside whatsoever to sending him back out there. I think that was the wrong call from our medicos. And even if Juddy was the one who made that call and said, I feel okay, the club needs to realise that players often don't come out truthfully with how they're really feeling. They just want to play. They want to get kicks. You know, they want to get on the end of everything. So I think the club also had a duty of care in that case. If Juddy said, I'm fine, to just sit back and say, hey, we're not going to risk it. Like, there's no point doing it, considering even more damage, you know, the risk of that. Mm. So I think it was just a shit situation all around. The wrong call was made, and we're seeing the consequences of that. But it's just shattering because he was probably another one who could have come in, if we're talking about the Pickett and McIntosh. Him and Banks were probably the two that you'd say, okay, well, if any younger players were coming in, it'd be those two to replace them. But now one's out and Banks has had his niggles this year as well. So, yeah, I just think the whole situation's poor. I sincerely hope that there's question marks being raised on our fitness department and our you know, our physios and things like that, the medicos, because we've got the longest injury list in the league now. We've got six
28 fit players left.
Yeah, six fit players running around who aren't playing in the 22, and that includes the three emergencies. So essentially three that aren't named on game day that are fit.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Like that is ridiculous. So I'm sure there's alarm bells going on at the club and there'll be an investigation. But yeah, I think it's just We had a pretty blessed run with injuries during our golden years.
We did.
I mean, not saying we didn't get injuries, but they were only 1 or 2 weeks. They weren't these 6 weeks turning, or you know, 5 week injuries that turn into full seasons for Lynch.
Yeah, it's the duration, isn't it?
Yeah, we're now getting hit with the long term injuries, which has crippled us, and it's the long term injuries to the players that we could least afford to lose. I mean, the biggest question mark we had going into the season was, can we get a full year out of Lynch or at least 15, 18 games? Well, no, yeah, we're not going to get that this year, and we're seeing the consequences of that. So yeah.
So I reckon anyone who's wearing one of these at the next home game could be half a chance to get picked at halftime. You'll be a chance to get on the ground. So wear your Guernseys, everyone.
Instead of the race, the Jeep, or whatever it was. Race the tiger, it's now chase a contract.
Yeah, we'd all play a quarter each. We'll raffle it off. Oh God. All right. Well, that just about wraps it up. I've seen a few people raise some thoughts on the mid-season draft. I don't have any knowledge or intel on it. I think I need to start finding some because we're going to be big players in it. I dare say we've got a few holes we need to fill. So, if anyone does have any thoughts on who we might take, feel free to send them through to us on the various socials. Or do you have any quick thoughts on who we might be looking at for the mid-season draft?
I haven't heard anything. I think at this point, I know we were split between getting in another a mature age midfielder, obviously in situations like this where Presti's injury prone, Hopper's injury prone, Taranto's injury prone. But then again, we've also got injuries up forward. So do we take someone like Mitch Schofield, who was our other preseason supplement pick where we picked Lafau over? So we may have two picks. Gibkiss is out, so that's one. And Clark, so that would free up two. So we may even go one midfield or one forward and see if that works. So Mutaz Al-Noor is probably a chance, but again, if that's the case, if we do that, then it's likely that Miller goes forward because he's done that. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
Dom, who has the best fend off, Dusty, McKelty, or myself? Rumors have it that McKelty saw my TikTok and thought, shit, I've got to take a leaf out of this guy's book. I'm going to start manhandling some actual adults on the weekend. So I might have them both covered there. But no, we'll have to take a look into some, mid-season draftees, because I'm sure we will need a few to top up with. But we may have another surprise next week for the first 10, 15 minutes of the show. But I won't go with it just yet, just in case it changes. In terms of trade goss, I'm still scared about Baker leaving. I think the club's also a little bit scared about Baker leaving. But I don't believe Tiggs is as scared as the rest of us, which is interesting. So not sure how that one's going to play out. Jack Graham, I think there's going to be some interest in. But I think we should have pulled the trigger a little while ago on that one. But I don't have anything concrete on that front. But yeah, we may have someone who might have some info on that next week. Who knows?
Yeah, I know Tiggs isn't as scared, but from what I've heard last night, my fears have increased. Really? And I was at 80% last time we talked about it, that Baker was gone, and that number's gone up.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. That's not good. All I know is that we're going to end up in a position where we're going to have a shitload of reasonably healthy draft picks, which is good. But, yeah, maybe it actually makes trading Baker out more difficult if we end up with pick 5 or 6. I'm not sure. I haven't done the mathematics and how it's all going to work, but... yes, I don't know if we'll do a trade show. We'll see how we go, but we'll hopefully have a certain someone on for a short period next week who might be able to shed some light on some stuff. But, Crocs just made a few people shit themselves a little bit.
I think Uze's at the point where he wants to refresh the club, and they're interested in getting picks in. And we've only got a few players of currency to trade out that'll get us decent draft picks to bring in some higher-end talent. And Baker is one of them, and Bolton is the other. And Bolton is not going anywhere. Bolton, yeah, he said he'd much rather be in Victoria than WA. He loves Victoria. Baker, on the other hand, has always said he wants to finish his career in WA. He gets back to Lake Grace, Pingaring, every off-season, every break he gets, he's always straight back to the farm. So the fact that Baker's now, 27, and he's in his prime career coming off a great season, it's pretty much cash in now, get a great cushy contract at either the Eagles or Freo, because they'll have to pay him $750,000 to $800,000 plus to lure him. Yeah, it's not looking good from what I'm hearing.
And there's a few interesting comments here and a lot that I agree with and I've said myself. First one from Tiger Pop, and people might not like hearing this, but it's the truth. If you're going to bottom out and have a full refresh, do it now before Tassie comes in as an expansion team and cleans up all the picks, because we were shit when GWS and Gold Coast come in and they had all the mini picks, all the mini drafts, and we missed out. And I know we ended up with 3 flags, which we're obviously forever thankful for, but we had to do it in a very compromised manner. So if we're going to have any thoughts of doing it, do it now before they come in. The second one was, where did I see it? Oh, with what would we get? I've heard that as well, Nick, that if we're going to do it, you have to be trying to aim for the stars and pick one. And whether it's Baker and our first pick for pick one, I'm not sure if that makes it more difficult if we're going to start with pick 5 or 6. But then we've also got a bucket load of the second and third round picks that we banked in the draft last year to clubs who are trying to bid on academy players. So I think we are definitely looking to try and stockpile all of our picks. But look, I think as painful and as crap as it would be to lose someone like Baker, if you're going to pull the trigger, if you want to do a full reset and get the talent in, do it properly. Don't half-ass it. That's all I would like the club to do.
Yeah, we don't want to go down the Hawthorn route like what they did early. They gave up so many first-round draft picks, and we see the position they're in now. So if we're going to do it, don't half-ass it. Don't do this constant 3 or 4 year rebuild. Let's just go hard now. Hit the reset button. None of this rebuild. Let's reset and start from scratch under Uze. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I definitely think that the pick one for our first and Baker is probably going to be our starting point. There may be some later picks exchanged, but again, it all depends on Freo, because apparently Freo are coming a lot harder than what West Coast are at the moment. So I think West Coast are afraid to give up the salary cap, because they'll have to extend Harley Reid and Campbell Chesser, Ruben Jinby, all of these younger players as well. So they're a bit more hesitant to spend the kind of cash that Baker's going to have to command to go back home.
And I think we are wanting to keep a lot of our younger players who are coming out of contract too. So there's a little bit of juggling to be done there as well. But no, it's going to be interesting. I think, look, as we said, I think as a Richmond supporter, brace ourselves for some not so happier times on game day for the rest of this season. Unfortunately, it's just one of those things. Circumstances a little bit out of our control, but we'll hopefully get some good games into these young kids. And hopefully have a bit of a mini reset and get some new kids in that are higher up in the draft order than what we're used to. But
that's the thing, though. It doesn't matter what pick one is, because the number one kid in the country right now is Levi Ashcroft, who's a Brisbane father-son. So he'll most likely go number one anyway. So just like we got shafted in the Gold Coast years and like we got shafted with Matthew Cruiser, pick one, again, there's every chance that we end up with pick one and still not get the number one rated kid in the country.
Ends up we end up getting pick seven out of it, or the seventh pick after all these selections.
Yeah, like we did in 2010, come 16th out of 17, and end up with pick nine, which was Brandon Ellis or something. Like, insane.
Anyway. All right, well, thank you, Grok, for jumping on tonight as well. Nick, thank you again for organising. Peter Wilson, much appreciated. It was an absolute pleasure to have him on for the first half an hour. Some great, great stories. I hope you all enjoyed hearing from Peter. It was very, very good. And we will be back on... Well, when do we play? Do we play next Wednesday?
Next Wednesday.
So we'll do a show Monday night. Very quick turnaround. But yeah, enjoy the week off, folks. Hopefully we can get the win against the bye. And we will reconvene on Monday evening to talk about the game against the D's. So make sure you like and subscribe to us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it. And we will see you all on next Monday. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.